Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile Coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next, you need the team to act on feedback fast. So you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
For a limited time, visit Miro.com/retro now for a free business plan trial to unlock advanced retro tools like private mode, voting, and two-way Jira syncing. That's Miro.com/retro now.
Welcome back to the second installment of our Spooktober Spectacular. Come and have a seat. We saved you a nice comfy spot right next to the corpse fire. Tucked away in the hills of Southern California sits a villainous valley steeped in terrifying tales. Rumored to have been the site of an ancient Native American burial ground, where the spirits of those who were brutally cut down by Spanish invaders still make their presence known to this very day. Local legend places more than a few accounts of mysterious murders and occult occurrences between the brush-covered ravine walls. There's even a tale of a shocking science experiment that may have been responsible for the disappearance of an intrepid inventor bent on bending the weather to his will. This case file joined the Furious as they hike the haunted hills around the gruesome gorge known as Turnbull Canyon.
Welcome to Alien Theorists. Rising! Case file 208, Turnbull Canyon. I'm Spooky Braden.
I'm Weirded Out Zell.
I'm Dan.
And I'm the Scarlet Mongoose.
Scarlet Mongoose. you repurposed your last week's costume.
What are you talking about? I'm Scarlet Spider now. I'm Ben Reilly this week. Last week I was Peter Parker.
That's different.
They're clones of the same person, but they're still different.
Live in the Spideyverse.
Hell yeah, buddy.
Week two, Spooktober. But before we get going onto this, onto Turnbull Canyon, I updated my firewall after the ATI started hacking me.
Good.
So now they sent me a threatening email with a video that I have to play.
Degenerates.
I prefer it this way. I prefer the threat rather than a computer takeover. So let's see what these fuckers are up to this week.
The following announcement has been paid for by Alien Theorist Illuminati.
It's creepy.
It's super creepy.
Gonna get us flagged by YouTube.
Happy birthday, Raven. How does it feel to be another year older? We've been watching you grow the past number of years. Getting older, needing glasses, losing strands of hair. And after all we've watched you go through, We can say that Fat Braden is fire, and Mr. Conspiracy is the better son.
Ah! Okay.
Oh, we're getting flagged on YouTube.
We're coming.
A little. Guess we're not monetizing this one.
Yeah, this one's done. Herbie Hancock.
She had some strong Bray Wyatt vibes in that video. That was creepy as hell.
All right, that was a little happy birthday to Braden.
Which it's not is my birthday, but
not quite yet. But while this is released, it'll be post birthday.
Yeah, but after. I appreciate the thought the ATI put into showing me in my ginch.
Doing the nice stomach rolls.
Stomach rolls.
It's a good look.
I like that.
Pink's noting it.
Fat Braden is funnier and Mr. Conspiracy is the better son.
He's just spitting facts.
Nothing but facts. Anyways, thank you, ATI, for not trying to break through my new firewall and saving my computer. Now you can't follow through on the threats that you posted in that email. So
yeah,
you better not.
Suck it.
Now today, we're talking about one of the most haunted places on Earth.
I can't take you serious. If you're not watching the live stream, Braden is a ghost with a mustache.
I'm an apparition.
No, he's more, he looks like a fucking Chicken McNugget with a sheet on him with eyeballs cut out.
All right, Terminal Canyon, one of the most haunted places in the world.
According to some people. And by some people, I mean Braden.
It's also referred to as the Gates of Hell.
Well, I mean, there's one place in there that's referred to as the Gates of Hell.
So I'm not wrong.
You're not wrong.
No, you're not wrong. So we're talking about Turnbull Canyon, which is also a great hiking trail, which is located in Los Angeles County.
Spooky hiking trail.
Between Hacienda Heights in there. So now, as with all good urban legends, the trouble starts way back with the Native American tribe that used to inhabit the lands known as the Gabrielino Indians back then. Now,
the Gabrielino?
Gabrielino.
Is this Native Italians invading fucking America? Here?
Like, well, know, it's like, well, they're named after the same Gabriel.
Hey, forget about it, eh?
Or the San
Gabriel.
We were here
first, eh?
They're named after the San Gabriel mission, which was located there and founded by the Spanish back during those times. So the land is believed to have some sort of significance to those Native American tribes. And it's said that at some point, perhaps some of the Native tribes identified this place, this location, as Hatugna, which means the dark place or even the place of the devil.
Oh, now, shit.
So,
but doing a little bit of digging, that's not all the way true. Technically, the Native Americans are.
Well, and also, like, it could be a mistranslation because Hatunga Matata means no worries.
Well, that's what also I was going to say, because they're already calling this, I was going to correct you, Dan, on your pronunciation, because we've already learned about this. This is the dark place. This is the part place the sun does not touch. This is not part of Mufasa's kingdom. We know this. Right. You don't go there.
Don't go.
Right.
We don't go there. We know this place.
Apparently, what most of the Native Americans, or at least the Native tribes there, called it was Owinya. Actually, Hatugna is what they referred to as what is currently now Yorba Linda, which is another township over there in California or nearby.
Hatunga sounds cooler.
Sure. Yeah. Now, it's said that perhaps that this, the dark energies that suffuse the Turnbull Canyon perhaps originated or began when like I said before, I referred to the Spanish coming in and colonizing the area, setting up missions in this. And it's, if you're you know anything about history, you know that the Spanish were pretty brutal to those who were Native Americans here and pretty much did not swiftly embrace Catholicism as their new religion.
Yeah, right from there all the way down through Central America, South America, any tribe they encountered back in the day.
So pretty much if you didn't accept, you know, Jesus as your personal Lord and Savior back then, you were going to just...
you were going to pay.
You're going to pay, and you're going to pay dearly. So, you know, between...
Have you heard the good word? No? Then you're dead.
Pretty much.
It was said, you know, besides what essentially amounted to genocide, you had the massive amounts of beatings and enslavement and that happened while the Spanish were colonizing most of the what is now the American South American and Central American Southwest.
That must have been so fucking confusing that these just randos show up and they're like, check this book out. This is what it is. You're going to love this guy. His name is Jesus. He's cool as hell. I'm going to teach you all about him. And these guys are looking at him. I'm like, I don't even know what you're saying, man. I can't even understand the words that you're trying to tell me. Why do you want me to have this fucking book? What's happening? And then you get murdered because you're not agreeing along. Like, could you imagine that? Like, yep. Why do you want me to worship this fucking guy? I don't even know who he is. I don't know who you are.
And we definitely have historical accounts of that friction leading into violent conflict and where the Indians, the Native Americans, actually fought with Spanish colonists, but Spanish colonists having the advent of gunpowder and muskets pretty much decimated anything that the any resistance that the Native Americans could set up. And therefore, you know, after slaughtering the native population, it's said that perhaps the spirits of those who were so beaten, bruised, and murdered in those lands has, you know, stayed there.
They stuck around.
It's almost like the Spanish never read the Bible. Right?
Well, a lot of people couldn't read back then.
They're just like, I think we should kill them now. Because it seems
I'm pretty sure, like, Old Testament, dude, it's like, you believe God or you should be smited.
And so there are reports to this day of people, hikers, and people who are investigating into the canyon find themselves, whether they're there for the legend or they're there just to take in the scenery. Some people have reported hearing the sound of what sounds similar to, or what they could identify as, they sound like war drums. Native American drums.
Hatunga.
Jumanji.
Are we sure Jumanji's not buried there somewhere in Turnbull County?
That's fair.
So Turnbull Canyon itself does have a little bit of a history, besides the supernatural ones that tales that are attributed to the place. You also have, there's a little bit of a strange, a couple of historic events that occurred there of some significance. So you have in 1845 is kind of when the history starts, and you had these two men who played a prominent part in Turnbull Canyon's history. You had John Rowland and William Workman. These two had immigrated from Taos, New Mexico, where
Billy Workman.
Where they had apparently run a somewhat successful, fur trapping business. Then in the mid-1840s, there were a number of conflicts over the ownership of California. So this is about the time you had the U.S. and Mexico fighting over parts of, you know, the Southwest and who belonged to what belonged to who. You know, this is my land. This is not your land.
This land is my land.
All that super
land.
Fun stuff going on.
Yeah, they hadn't made that song yet, obviously.
And so in early 1845, William Workman became a captain of a cadre of Americans and Europeans that were serving Governor Pio Pico in his fight against Governor Manuel Micheltorena in the Battle of Cahuenga Pass during the Mexican-American War. So, you know, don't you guys just miss the days where you could just take up and just like, I'm going to be a army captain today and let's go. Like,
look at me.
Off.
I'm the governor.
Just your roaming band of marauders doing whatever you want with no,
pretty much
no oversight of law. Just, we can do whatever we want here.
The four of us would be dead so fast.
You know, your little ranch, wherever you've built your little log cabin, they're like, hey, you guys want to go perform a coup d'etat? And I was like, Yeah, all right. Sure. I don't got anything to do today.
I agree with Brayden. We'd be dead in a second. Like, hey, guys.
400%.
Let's take up arms against these guys. We show up, we turn and run, and they shoot us in the back.
Meet them at the clock tower.
Yeah.
So following this battle, the governor that they were serving under, Pio Pico, took over and was appointed governor of Alta California. And so in return, he gave 49,000 acres of land to Workman and Rowlin, or between them both.
Not a bad chunk of land right there.
Ooh-wee. Yeah, all you had to do is like show up one day, you know, it's kind of like, yeah, you just go overthrow a governor and then you get 49,000 acres of land. When does that ever happen?
Well, it's hard though. Look what happened to the Capitol last year. It's fucked. It's just not easy, right? Come on now.
Now, again, the Native Americans were still in the middle of all of this, and they didn't necessarily like that Workman when he came in and started forming his developing the land for his own purposes and to increase his own wealth. And then so they would constantly be at odds with each other, and they would always apparently try to invade his property. So taking the proper precautions to guard against this, Workman's idea was to build an underground living space, like essentially a family bunker, safe room for protection. And then eventually, when relations between him and the Native Americans somewhat cooled, some of them actually went to work for Workman.
Could you imagine that for a second, though? You're like, I've got this land, I'm going to build my house, and like every day you get raided by people trying to murder you and burn down anything that you've built.
I mean, that's how he got the land, though.
That's just how it was.
It's true. Right?
That's the way she goes.
That's the way she goes back in the day. Rules of the road.
It's like, it's just some guy showing up and be like, this is mine now. All this land is mine now. It's like, well, nobody loans the land. You're like, I do.
That's mine.
I do now.
What a time to be alive. Just a free for all. I've been like, everything you see here is mine. Who says? Me.
Me.
I say.
This piece of paper, this guy that you've never heard of, gave me the land. It's mine now.
Could you imagine being like a good forger back in the day and be like, this is a declaration from Governor Pico Delgado.
Would you even need to be a good one? I feel like you'd need to be more of a fucking con artist, because half these dudes can't even read.
Yeah. And then you're just like, I now own all this land. And everyone's like, well, he's got a piece
of paper. He's got a piece of paper. It must
There's
be
words
real.
On that paper. I know what words look like, and those look like words. So
those look like words to me.
Get the fuck out of here.
Shit, we're trespassing. We better get out of here.
So during the time that some of the Native Americans went to go work for Workman, there were reports, or there have been recorded reports, that they said that they had come upon things, apparitions, witches, ghosts on the property. So it wouldn't be surprising if the land was actually cursed somewhat, because Workman, even though he had some type of good fortune in pretty much getting this ton of acreage of land, his later life was plagued by misfortune. And
well, not to mention like
life back then.
Life
was just miserable back then.
But I was thinking, like, if there was these constant like issues and stuff, like perhaps you had like local, you know, people that were fluent in cursing and stuff that were like doing stuff like that, like not like rather than physically going in and trying to attack this person, they were just like, hey, I'm gonna curse this land, right, and do some hexes or whatnot.
I'm gonna break all the mirrors on this guy's property. I'm gonna make some fucking voodoo dolls. I'm gonna shit in a corner where he can't find it, so it stinks.
He's gonna walk under, walk under 1,000 ladders.
Yeah, it's nothing he can do about it. I'm gonna step on all the cracks,
break all the mom's backs. But that's the thing. Like, I kind of thought like that maybe that would have been an option back then too for some of the Native Americans, is like maybe they had hexes and curses that we don't know about that are just lost in time that they would have, you know, like they would have done on the land as well.
And maybe some of those curses worked, because Workman actually ended up losing most of his 49,000 acres. You could say perhaps you could attribute it perhaps to the curse or to
tuberculosis.
Not this time. Or the fact that he, I believe he tried to back another governor to overthrow the governor that had given him the land. So he was on the wrong side of the fence at this time. And the governor had found out about it. The current governor found out about it. So took all of that. Then he also had founded a somewhat lucrative banking, or perhaps maybe not lucrative, but suspect, like a very loose banking business, which was known to have a number of, you know, questionable practices while they were doing it. And then when there was a sudden recession, basically, you know, there was an economic downturn at one point, and then everybody came in rushing in to get their money out. They didn't have their money. They had to shut the bank for 30 days. And then he pretty much was like, we don't have any money. And then he had to disappear.
Is this when this bank closes, is that how fucking good old Robbie Turnbull comes in? Is that the same bank situation?
So it's not the same bank.
Oh, I was going to say, what if that's fucking crazy?
Because it might not be that same bank, because Robbie Turnbull came much later, and then Workman actually ended up shooting himself in 1876.
On purpose?
Yes.
You never know.
He was cleaning his handgun and off it went.
Right? Yeah. It's a good point of clarification. Yes, he shot himself on purpose.
In the back of the head twice.
Yeah.
two in the chest, one in the head.
Yeah.
He was on his knees. His hands were bound, but I mean,
there were a lot of people who were pretty mad at him that they couldn't get their money back from his bank. So I don't know.
Oh, exactly.
Well, and that's the thing, that would still happen today if everyone went to the bank and was like, give me my money.
Like, we don't have your money. It's all, we loaned it out.
I feel like they'd be able to give me my $18.75.
My money? Yes.
Yeah, we'd be able to get our money, but.
My money personally, yes. Someone would rifle through their pocket.
I'm sorry, sir. You actually owe us money. So
yeah, here's a moth.
Yeah.
So now the namesake of the cabin or the canyon, as Andrew mentioned before, is Robert Turnbull, who is actually a shepherd who had moved to California seeking to make money in real estate.
This guy is the perfect combination of Scrooge McDuck and Mr. Conspiracy. Like, literally, like, as soon as you learn about him, he's like, yeah, this is a fucking alcoholic Scotsman that likes to go around buying up all these properties. And all he does is get drunk and fight people.
Fight people, yeah.
That's all he wants to do, is get drunk and fight. Like, it's hilarious.
And he wins most of them, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was said, and it has kind of like, it has fallen into local lore that it is said that Turnbull never did business sober. Because anybody who ever did a deal with them said they had never seen him not drunk. And so in 1885, you had two Quaker men, Aquila Pickering and Jonathan Bailey, who were searching for land in California to start a new Quaker colony.
Quakers are like Amish.
They make the oats.
They're like, they're exactly what's Amish. A Quaker? Because I remember hearing the term Quaker before, and
not off the top of my head, but I think they're distinct from Amish. They're not exactly Amish.
But it's the same kind
they
of
are
like
Protestant Christians.
Yeah.
But it's like the same thing there where
they're like the friendly versions of Christians. I've always had them in my head as being extremely friendly. Well, I mean, like Catholics, like to.
Well, here's my
not
question.
Spanish is what you're saying.
What I'm saying is Catholic, like, are these the people that you see like dressed old timey, like walking around like today?
Amish or Mennonites. Like,
yeah. But like back then they would have been in fashion. So it's hard. Like you.
I mean, I suppose.
But is Quaker the same?
I feel like you're just judging the Quaker Oats guy.
They're just like, yeah. Like,
that guy kind of looks Amish. So
I am judging the Quaker Oats guy.
No, I think they're just like, they're normal. They just have a certain different interpretation of the Bible than some other people. Or they have a certain emphasis on certain other traits and morals of the Bible.
They are generally united in belief in each human's ability to experience the light within. Or see that God is in everyone.
Yeah.
I can dig that.
I can get behind that. That's not bad.
But do they wear? Are they wearing old style clothes? Like, that's what I want to know.
Depends. I mean, in 1845 and 1885, they wear.
Yeah, that shit was in 1845. Yeah. Dude, that was normal.
The Quaker Oats guy. That's the standard. That's standard fashion back in the day.
Yeah. George Fox, I think.
founded by
so
George
these
Fox,
two yep. men approached Turnbull, who had purchased the land, and they wanted to began the process of acquiring a lot of the land around Turnbull Canyon. Well, you know, and it wasn't known as Turnbull Canyon at that time. Like, and it was also one of the only kind of like, it had a good place for where you wanted to put your flocks, because it had one of like the few water sources like in that area, like a flowing, I think it had a flowing stream of some
cursed place. Water source though.
Cursed waters. All right. And so they had to, you know, for years, try to, you know, send Turnbull offers, and he kept turning them down. And then in 1887, they offered their final highest offer of, at the time, $30,000.
Woo! Fucking crazy for 1887. That's like a fucking down payment on an apartment or some shit nowadays.
Yeah, it's like a lot. Now. It's a lot of money back then. And then, so when they, you know, finally they wanted this, Turnbull accepted the offer, you know, which was essentially half of what they had invested in what is now in his Uptown Whittier area. So it's like they had purchased it like double its price, essentially. Like, it's an insane amount of money for that time. So, and just a year later, Turnbull, on January 18th, 1888, he spent the evening, as he had many others, apparently drinking, as he is known to do.
Smoking and straight west coast.
On the way back home, he fell off his horse and was arrested for public drunkenness, as had happened on many occasions, apparently.
As it happens. No big deal.
Now, after spending the night in jail.
Did they take
jail,
his horse away for a bit? Like, do you get some type of DUI while you're riding a horse intoxicated? Or you think
I don't think
okay?
they had DUI back then. I think it I don't think you were considered standard. Impaired when you were drunk back then.
Yeah, I also.
Driving well, I don't think it was considered an horse impairment.
Bound. Well, I also think the cops were probably the same, in the same boat back then. Everyone had a couple whiskeys in them.
Yeah, well, they arrested him, though. Be like, hey, listen, we're fucking drunk, but you're really drunk. You got to go
no,
to jail.
No, you're
dude.
Too
you can't
drunk.
Can't ride your fucking horse.
After spending the night in jail, Turnbull returned home broken, bruised, and bloodied. And he couldn't remember how he had gotten that way.
Abducted.
No, dude, like this guy, according to his housekeeper, he slept 24 hours straight. He woke up acting super bizarre. Like this, he's one of those dudes that would be wearing his petticoat and everything all matching little fucking buckles on his boots, like a cool Quaker, all that kind of stuff. She said he came up, got all dressed, mismatched. Cool Quaker. And as soon as he went to leave the house, he grabbed one of her like hats, which was like a fucking bonnet, and like strolled out of the house.
See you later.
Like, all right, check you later. And she's just like, what the fuck is going on with this guy?
And later those injuries would be his undoing, as apparently they were deemed the cause for him falling off of his horse off the Macy Bridge into the LA River. And then his body was later discovered there and
fell off his horse into the river.
Into the river.
Right.
That's
but
suspicious.
But the coroners concluded that it was murder.
Ooh. Well, here's the thing though. Like, he definitely the night before, like, you can get pretty fucked up falling off your horse. So I'm not necessarily saying he was beat to death or whatever, or beat the night before, but he definitely, like, the way his caretaker described him and everything, he definitely had a TBI. Like, he had some sort of some type of fucking subarachnoid bleed or something like that. He definitely was not in his right mind. There was a slow bleed, and I don't know if he was riding his horse, had an aneurysm, threw a clot, fell off his horse and into the river, but he definitely was, like, there was definitely some traumatic brain injury involved.
But they concluded that it must have been murder.
That's what the conclusion of the coroner's report.
Well, they're talking about his shit kicking he took the night before, basically.
So they are saying that those injuries, which had caused his...
which would then be labeled as murder.
Right. So, but it was never solved. Nobody knew.
Yeah, because he had a blood clot or something, right? That's how he died then?
Well, he fell off probably the fall from the bridge is what killed him, but...
No. Like, they did the autopsy, and the reason why he fell off his horse is because he had a fucking... he threw a clot. He had a fucking massive stroke.
I didn't read that. I thought, like, he's just riding his horse, and he... In my mind, he got, like, bludgeoned off his horse. And when I read it, I was like, that's what I thought happened. Got bludgeoned off his horse into the river.
That might have been what happened the night before, though. why he fell off, like why he got knocked off his horse.
Right. So, I mean, like Andrew said, it does have a lot of points that seem similar to somebody who's experienced a TBI, a traumatic brain injury. And it's like either he got it while getting the shit kicked out of him. I've had a, you know, bar. He said, you know, he said shit, talk shit to the wrong person. And, you know, got knocked the fuck out.
Alcohol thins your blood.
And then he also fell off his horse, which, like, falling off a horse is no joke. Like, you're falling, like, dude, what is that?
That
like,
fucked up Superman.
Four or five feet. Like, sure. And if you just, like, tip over off the back and fucking just jam your skull and, you know, nose dive into the dirt, like,
oh, dude. Well, I've done them. I've done plenty of fucking falls off horseback when I was at work in rural and, like, Caramias and stuff like that. Like, people get fucked up falling off horses. You get bucked off the back, crack your head open, break your pelvis, like,
even just a simple fall off a horse. I mean, if it's a big horse standing 5 feet at the shoulders, 5-6 feet, even that, like at a small trot or something.
And a big problem we have with people who are intoxicated is like, they don't break their fall at all. Like they don't put their hands out to stop their heads from hit. They go fucking
face dirt.
Yeah. Like there's no bracing that fall. You are fucking toast.
So because he had been kind enough to sell to the Quakers actually named it Turnbull Canyon after him. So it's named after Robbie Turnbull.
Which is pretty cool.
No, Quakers, nice people.
I'd say
living for the light.
Yeah, I agree.
So now you've got Native American curses, you've got suicides, you've got a seems to be the guy that's named after got murdered.
Spooktober, it's murder. It's murder.
Definitely
Spooktober.
Murder.
It's murder, it's Spooktober. Murder. And you've got all of these three things fitting in there. But apparently, it even gets a little bit weirder.
Dude, it gets weirder. But before we get to that, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back.
So now, you have the already a paranormal trifecta of occurrences that have happened in the history of Turnbull Canyon, making it a perfect place for spookiness to arise. But then you get this one part, which for me kind of actually the other stuff I could kind of sell out to maybe like, you know, I could probably
urban
reason out to be, you know, historical people taking liberties with historical accounts, things like that. And like, okay, maybe it's not 100% accurate. But then there's a bit of a story that comes from the 1930s about a bit of an eccentric person named William Height, who apparently made his mark as what was known back then as a rainmaker. And he also, back then, like around that time, you had a lot of people going around like Southern California and those areas were experiencing a historical drought. And so you had this kind of wave of,
mad scientists.
Mad scientists, 90% snake oil salesmen, whatever. But people who are promising that they could bring rain to the, you know, water-starved crops and places of the, you know, all the little places in Southern California. So you had this one specific person, William Height, who invented what he termed the Electrodome.
Dope name.
Maybe I'm not doing it.
The Electrodome.
Better than.
So now he claimed that his device,
the Electrodome,
would generate negative electrical currents in the atmosphere and create a pulsating direct current from the ground to the sky. Therefore, pulling down, like his reason here, his explanation was to be able to create rain because you would, you know, the negative and positive, charges would like attract each other. So you're essentially just like pulling rain out of the sky as, you know, if you're following along with his reasoning. And so this would allow people who were utilizing his device to create rain, displace fog, and even prevent frost from forming on crops. So basically being able to manipulate moisture in any form.
So it's nothing like the Thunderdome.
No.
No.
Which I was a little bit disappointed. Disappointed when I found that out.
It's fucking let down, man. Med Max isn't going
so
there.
So this is like the early stages of like cloud seeding.
Harp.
Energy. Yeah, early, weather manipulation.
Stages of what some people would term like this was like proto harp right here. weather control by technological means, you know, not necessarily chemical means like rain, like cloud seeding, but, you know, actual, you know, ionizing radiation or electrical currents or ionizing currents that would allow him to manipulate the atmosphere in such a way as to produce rain.
You're right at like the end of Tesla's, all his research and AC current and stuff, like the playing with the ionosphere, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah, now you have this mad scientist in, you now have a mad scientist in a laboratory in Turnbull County or Turnbull Canyon.
Right. So he got some financial support from a citrus farmer named John Dodrill. And so that allowed William to be able to build, I mean, it wasn't enough to build exactly what he wanted. I think he wanted to build multiple towers, but he got enough to build one big one is what he figured. One big one's better than a bunch of little tiny ones in his mind. And so he built this old one. Which was also, you know, he saved a bit of scrap, you know, saved a bit of scrap because he based it off of an old existing oil tower that was located there in Turnbull Canyon. Now, the laboratory was sitting on an 80-foot tower, so you kind of imagine this. An electro dome reached about 125 feet from the ground to the sky. So it's huge, big towers sitting out there. And it said that his final test of his experiment happened on New Year's Eve.
New Year's Eve, eh?
At the strike of midnight in 1932. And then after that, William Hite was never heard from again.
Oh. Because he went back to the future, baby.
Yeah, right. He turned himself into Bulkhead Bill.
He's fused into Turnbull.
Philadelphia Canyon. Experiment style.
No.
Maybe we've got it all wrong. In the Philadelphia experiment, they didn't have a Tesla coil. It was actually a fucking electrodome.
Right? William Hite is essentially lost to history after that. He is pretty much...
That's because he went back to the future. Same shit.
Man, it's pretty cool because I kind of looked into the... Because I was like... The weather manipulation. I was like, man, that's pretty sweet. And I guess there is a company called Australian Rain Technologies, and they claim to use this guy's as like their, they're not like using his work, but like that was what inspired them. And they use charged like aerosol particles that can be turned on and off in the ionosphere to create rain.
Oh, that's cool.
And they just finished like a 10-year study, and like pretty steady, they can increase rainfall by about between like 15 and 20% in a region using this technology. It's like these charged...
That's fucking sweet!
Charged aerosol particles into clouds. And then when you like, I guess it's some type of wireless energy. And when they turn them on, it has like a 15 to 20% chance of increased rainfall. Up to 90%, but that's like, you know, 1% of can be 90%. But like, so this cloud seeding... I guess it's been like 70, 80 years of them claiming like, oh yeah, we can create rain. We can do this. We can do that. But now it looks like they actually can in some ways. Because they kind of use this technology at the Olympic Games in Beijing to decrease smog. But they filter out the smog by making it rain. But you can only do it over a small region.
I feel like there's other ways to do that too. Maybe like cut down on pollution.
Yeah, maybe a change from coal power or whatever. But I just thought it was interesting that there is
come
like this.
Come on, let's not get crazy.
How did he afford to build this tower, Dan? Like, did he use his own money or did he have a bunch of investors?
No, he had the investor. Like I said, he had the. Most of the funds came from a citrus farmer, John Dodrill.
He fucking disappeared after that.
He was sucked into the nether pool that he opened up.
Get the fuck out of here! I don't know all this money. It's bullshit.
This has big citrus written all over it.
The massive amounts of electrical energy, ionizing electrical energy that he used in the electrodome, ripped open a portal between our world and the nether world, and he was sucked into it, never to be seen again.
I mean, is that hard to understand?
It is a picture.
I'm on board with that.
That a guy of this stature who is working on something like this that is such like a prominent part of history in this time essentially disappears completely. Like that seems very strange. Like that's
be easy to disappear back then. Go to a different country and no one's ever going to fucking know.
Yeah, but
or
someone
hear
would be like, you know, you think someone like of this stature would be like, and then he moved away. Like from him being
but
like,
he wanted to disappear. Yeah. That's the thing, is he wanted to fucking disappear, so he disappeared. I feel like back then, for sure, you could disappear.
It's strange that he does a test at the stroke of midnight. which is a weird fucking time to do a test.
Agreed.
And then,
poof.
And then he's never seen or heard from again in history.
He's embarrassed. Spent all this money. I'm a failure. Going to fucking Mexico, baby.
So after this, you start getting, you know, all throughout, I guess throughout the Depression, there's also tales of other things kind of happening. This is when you kind of get the more, a bit more sinister happenings going on within Turnbull Canyon, and people kind of describing that there's some type of dark force which is taking up residence within the canyon itself. Ooh. And it seems to draw evil to it.
I got a spooky one right around this time frame here. Great Depression. You want some of this?
Yeah.
As long as it's in the spooky.
Please don't talk about the Great Depression, because that's depressing enough.
It gets even more fucked up though. Not only are people broke, but people are dying. So around the same time, obviously desperate times, Americans all over the country were struggling to make ends meet. People died of starvation, disease, and basically were living in complete despair. It was during these bleak years that people from, how do you say it? Puente?
Puente, yeah.
Puente Hills began to hear strange rumors of the new residents of Turnbull Canyon. A large group of men and women with no children, wearing black robes. They were numerous and organized, and their business was horrifying. One witness carefully sneaking up on the camp was able to take a close look at their rites and returns to tell the tale. A young boy, 12 years old at most, was strapped to a cross in the center of a circle of people. Entranced and paralyzed with fear, the Puente Hills resident watched as the robed figures danced around and around, chanting in a language he could not recognize. Satan is good. Satan is your friend. I want to kill everyone. After a time, the chanting suddenly increased.
That's in English. They didn't understand English?
The cross was hoisted upright, the child struggling but unable to cry out through the rough cloth that had been stuffed into his mouth. Pulling the cross back down and then hoisting it up the other way, the townsman finally truly realized what was happening. An upside down cross, I don't know, that doesn't make sense, but an upside down cross, but he could do nothing. The cultist struck the boy again and again, blood flying out from every direction. Eventually, their fury subsided, and so did the blows. Peering close, the Puente Hills resident breathed a sigh of relief to see the boy was still breathing. But what happened next, he could never forget. They took him away. They simply removed the boy, stuffing him in a large sack and tossing him roughly into a wagon. The man returned down to tell the tale, but he was not believed until some month later when a rash of kidnappings and disappearances struck the area. So they're also said, like, around this time, because of the Great Depression, there was like a huge uptake in children being abandoned or put up for adoption. And they theorized that these cults were the ones that were adopting these kids, or maybe even just kidnapping them from the orphanages and using them for ritual sacrifice.
Well, it's one of those things too. In this time, what?
It's the ghost. It's the ghost talking.
It's in this time you have all these people that there. It's, you know, there's great despair everywhere. So it's, for me, it's not a reach for these people, especially in this time, to, you know, think that maybe these kind of practices or sacrifices or stuff like these kind of rituals might change favor for someone.
No, what? No.
What do you mean?
This isn't fucking Roman times where you got to sacrifice a bull to get a good harvest. This is like fucking late 1800s.
Basically, the 1930s.
The 1930s, where you think it's fine to sacrifice a child for economic gain? Like, maybe, what are
maybe,
you talking
maybe
about?
Some I'm just of these saying, people.
Desperate times call for desperate sacrifice. Measures.
No.
Call for ritual sacrifice.
Sacrifice?
That is one of the alleged.
God forbid our viewers just start plummeting one time. We'd stop making some Patreon money. Brain's like, well, guys, I guess we got to kill a kid.
No big deal.
How do you think we got our Spotify deal?
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah. And why do you think we had a change of conscience, didn't do another one, and we lost it. So yes. That's our fault.
So That is also one of the legends that is attributed to the malevolent energies or the malevolent appeal of Turnbull Canyon. Now, you also apparently have, which was an actually real thing, and you can, this was in the news at the time, in 1952, you had an airline, an actual airplane crash happen in Turnbull Canyon.
Right into the canyon.
This was in April 18th of 1952, and it was reported that LA International Airport Control Tower had lost contact with a flight 416 that was being piloted by Lewis Powell. Now, around 10 a.m. that same morning, a rancher named Hayden Jones was driving around the Whittier Heights ranch when he saw smoke rising from the hills. Now, he was concerned, of course, this being, you know, being seen black smoke in this area, potentially a forest fire or something like this. He climbed up a hill to find flaming pieces of steel that had smashed into the hillside of the canyon. Mm. Now, those who inspected the crash site said that the plane seemed to have burst into flames on impact. And the local ranchers didn't actually spot the burning plane until 10 a.m. that morning because the fog had been exceedingly heavy that morning. So it had actually concealed the smoke within that fog.
That fog was charged with the time-traveling energy from William Height.
Exactly.
A total of 29 people were on board that flight. 416.
And they were all orphaned children.
And all the passengers were said to have died at the moment of impact. Like they said that it was difficult to identify a lot of the bodies because they had been burned and pretty much to a crisp.
Well, and like mashed into the fucking ground like a bunch of little bulkhead bills. Like they were one with the canyon at this point.
So this is where you more get like some people Kyle's. Saying that perhaps something had pulled them into the canyon. Like, how do you crash so hard into a canyon like that deliberately?
Well here, like, this is kind of how they summarize what happened. So when the plane, like, so right around 2:30, they were talking to air control because the fucking crazy thick fog that you're already talking about that actually hid the plane, right? So nobody really saw it until 10 o'clock the next day. So they were descending into Burbank when they were radioing with ATC and were like, listen, we can't see fuck all. This is like sketchy. So air traffic control rerouted them to LAX. Mm. So they were rerouting to LAX and it seemed like the fog started to follow them. Now, right around, like Dan was saying, 3 o'clock, air traffic control reported losing all communication with them. And around the same time, the residents around the Turnbull Canyon area reported hearing that the fucking plane was scraping the fucking rooftops of the local residents. Oh, like they heard fuck. It shake their fucking houses being like, what the hell? So it turns out, because they were initially prepping for fucking descent into Burbank, they forgot to retract the landing gear. So as the landing gear was still down, apparently the pilot tried to go underneath the fog, not knowing that he was in a canyon, right? So he descended under the fog to be able to get a better look at what was happening. One of the landing gear got caught on the canyon itself, causing the fucking plane to spiral into the fucking side of the building, or building, the canyon. They basically ripped off a huge chunk of the canyon with the wing. There's like a giant laceration still to this day in the canyon, and then sent them straight down into the ground.
Well, he got,
so you're saying something pulled them into the canyon.
Gravity vortex. Weirder, gravity vortex from the canyon pulled on the lowered landing gear, clipping the top of the canyon, sending them into a gravity fueled destruction.
It was the ghost.
Right? You're saying the dark fog
of the of the ancient Minestrone native tribe that pulled them down.
It seems weird vortex to me that evil. A plane would risk traveling at that low of an altitude in the first place, that they're clipping their fucking landing gear.
Well, but they shouldn't have. For the big problem, they would have been fine if the landing gear wasn't down. Apparently, that was the big problem, and they had no
close.
Idea.
That's pretty
like,
close.
Like honestly, how big's landing gear?
I'm not gonna disagree
like,
with you, but
the pilot's like, oh, I didn't know I had the fucking landing gear down. That gives us 3 feet
clearance.
Well,
we don't know because he's fucking dead.
Well, yeah, so but that's no what I'm clue. Saying. I'm like, that's dangerously low.
Yeah, but he had no idea he was in a canyon, right?
The demons of the canyon created the fog. The gravity of the canyon pulled them down. Well, they had a couple of questions, though,
because, like, I get this same pilot was actually supposed to be pulled off from working at doctor's order because they had a heart attack a month before this happened. So they wondered, possibly, did he have a jammer while he was mid-flight?
Well, usually a co-pilot, though.
There was two, yes.
Or,
and then
this fucking weird machine, what's Height's name or whatever, is Billy Height?
William Height, yeah.
His machine fucked with the instruments because this person flew too close to the canyon. So maybe he didn't realize how low he was because whatever this fucking, he was fucking around with this radio tower was fucking up with this guy's contraptions.
Yes, the time, another time travel of the electrodome fucked with this plane.
Another weird thing too is, I guess 3 years prior to this crash, that the pilot who was piloting the plane invented this navigation tool that was specifically made for navigating through adverse weather conditions, including fog. And he brought that to the Aeronautics Commission. Does that sound right? Mm-hmm. Let's pretend that's right.
That sounds right.
Commission brought it forward to get it patented and made. And they fucking turned their noses up at it and like, yeah, no, we have no interest in this. And then so the guy's family stood there with a picture of the designs of his fucking invention, saying, like, claiming that this would have saved that crash, and like had a picture of it in the fucking paper after the plane crash. Been like, this should have saved our father's life and all 28 other people that were part of this plane.
Oh, crazy.
Do they now use it?
Bizarre. I don't know.
I'm sure they got some pretty sophisticated instruments for detecting.
Because what is it? This is 1952?
Yeah, we're not long after, like, you know, commercial air travel had really begun.
So now you have that going on. You had an entire, you know, 29 souls perishing and flaming steely death in Turnbull Canyon. But also, apparently, you have stories of an insane asylum, because what spooky place would be complete without stories and local legends of an insane asylum being somewhere in the location. Now, this insane asylum was said to have been put behind, and the only evidence that people point to is there is a mishmash chain link fence that is
glowing red,
off a part
glowing of, red with molten lava flowing through it, marking hell.
If by molten lava you mean like overgrown with local vegetation and grass and
thorny Venus flytraps,
yeah, thorny
fucking
savage
poison ivy,
savage looking plants that will
Venus flytraps. I know only grow in like a certain place in North Carolina, I think, actually.
Yeah, and hell,
and Turnbull Canyon.
Yeah, and hell. I mean, I suppose. So, this insane asylum that is sealed off, like this gate, is apparently been given the name the Hell's Gate,
Hell's
or
Gate.
Gates of Hell,
Gates of Hell, yeah. Hell,
and then things like that. And they're saying the that perhaps mouth. Like this insane asylum that had been there had been a place of course, you know, abusive experiments, the places where the insane had gone to essentially die and disappear,
lobotomized,
and apparently burned down in the 1940s. But that wasn't the end. Now, sometime around 1962, as the tale goes, there was a group of teenagers that were partying in the ruins of this insane asylum. And one of them decided to explore a bit deeper into the insane asylum, and he came upon a long dormant electroshock device,
oh,
you know,
shit.
thinking that I guess it looked pretty neato. He managed to interact with the device, and apparently it pumped several thousand volts through his body, and he died there.
It's like the accounts of that one too. It's like he put it on his head, and the second he basically touched all the electrodes and they all made contact, his friends stood there as they watched this kid
barbecued,
like straight up barbecued, skin melting, like terrifying.
We're talking Raiders. We're talking Raiders here.
Like, yeah, Raiders, Nazi, like terrifying, like watching someone just receive an imaginable amount of electricity pulse through their body.
People don't really melt. I'll be honest with you. They don't really melt.
Well, I don't think it melted, but he melted inside out. And it was like, I imagine it's not a fun thing to watch someone get that kind of electricity go through them.
Is it like there's still power going to this place?
That's what I was
like
gonna,
how long had it been?
Yeah, is supernatural this, power, spooky power.
It's charged by a ghost battery with thousands of volts.
Did you not? Yeah, we just talked.
It's the power of the electrodome through space time, coming back to this time, zapping this person.
Mm-hmm. Can't argue with that. So at this point, Dan, just because with the stories I heard, that at this point in time, this asylum was just the foundation was left, really. Like it had burnt down.
Yes. Yeah. It had burned down. Well, they were in the ruins. Like I said, they were in the story goes that they were in the ruins of this place, you know, hanging out, smoking weed. I don't know.
So it was just like a charred fucking little electro shot.
Because that's exactly where you want to get high, is in a fucking abandoned sailing asylum. Like, come on, people. I guess there hadn't been a lot of horror movies back then.
Hey, dude, a bunch of teenage Zells?
This is before getting high in Zell? Creepy places was
well,
a movie
we,
trope.
We used to not even get high, but like by Zell's parents' house, there's like all these sketchy ass caves.
Oh, yeah.
And when you go in those caves and you turn on a light, all that's on the wall, 420.
Sketchy ass, caves, 420.
So it's like, before it was legal, like people would try to find all sorts of places to get high.
Yeah, I mean, then that checks out. That'd be like, that's the one place that you'd want to go is a haunted insane asylum because nobody would go there.
Yeah, no one's going to bug you.
Except the ghost.
This place is burnt to a crisp. All that remains is the foundation, concrete foundation. And then in the perfect area, there is a intact electro helmet or probe, whatever.
Shockometer. Yes.
And then connected to that is a hidden underground battery that stored charge for all these years. That's what's happened here.
Yes.
No, I liked your whole fucking Thunderdome explanation more, though, I'll be honest.
Okay, so it's this device is charged through the ionosphere through space-time by the electrodome.
A lot of big words there, so it has to be real.
I like it.
So you have some of these suspect or legendary encounters that have happened in Turnbull Canyon, but actually Turnbull Canyon has been the site of a few actual tragedies.
Murder!
Indeed, murder in this one. At least one of those deaths was the tragic death of Gloria Gaxiola, which she was a 17-year-old girl from Baldwin Park, and she apparently had been shot in the head brutally, then dragged behind a car, killing her, if the shot in the head wasn't enough. In 2002, in right along Turnbull Canyon Road in Hacienda Heights. And then police actually couldn't solve the murder for 5 years, despite their best efforts. And then finally a witness stepped forth would actually help them crack the case. And when they put out an article in one of the newspapers talking to some of the members of her local church, and they were talking to some, like one of them where her brother was a pastor, another pastor was talking about how Turnbull Canyon was a bit known as this kind of place that was kind of infamous for being involved in things like like dark happenings there. Like they identified it as a place of some place that you would find the devil is this thing.
Well, and then, the gate to hell there. Of course. What do you think is behind the gate to hell? It's the fucking devil, right?
Yep.
And kind of backing that up. One of the newspaper articles had a quote from a retired Los Angeles County firefighter who said he had worked for 13 years out there on Turnbull Canyon Road. And he said that it was a good place and place where they would often find the bodies of people who had been executed or bodies had been dumped off by local gangs.
What better place? It's the perfect location for that.
We do know now, though, that the canyon, it may taketh, but it also giveth back.
Zombies?
Maybe we don't know. I mean, you know what? There's two options here. This lady, Christina Martinez, is either, like Dan said, a zombie, or she's a very distant relative of Rasputin. because that's those are the only two things that make fucking sense here. So listen to this story.
Is there a Hatunga? Is there a Hatunga casino? Or are we sure?
No.
No casino. Not.
Why the fuck are we talking about casinos?
Well, because you said to give it back. I thought maybe
casinos never get back.
Did they deal? Did the casinos deal with life?
I think sometimes.
Well, it depends.
Well, we'll see here. All right. So Cristina Martinez struck it big at the Hatunga Casino on August 4th, 2009. She was at a party with her boyfriend and a group of friends. When the group of friends were decided to go home early, offered Martinez a ride home. She said yes. Boyfriend decided to stay at the party. So on their way home, they decided to stop at the beach first. Martinez said she didn't find anything odd because she had been going to the beach late at night with these individuals several times before. It was when the group started driving north toward Whittier that she realized something was wrong. But when she asked where they were going, nobody replied. Then all of a sudden, one of the guys in the front seat whispered to another to grab the rope and tie her hands. That launched a physical and verbal struggle where Mendoza, one of the perpetrators, and Meraz eventually pinned her down, binding her wrists with a rope. Mendoza pulled out two syringes, she said, and jammed one and then the other into her neck. The second syringe was pulled out several times and pushed back into her neck, she said. It appeared Mendoza was reloading it, though she didn't know with what. She described feeling a rush of heat and then choking and coughing and struggling to breathe as she became nauseous. The driver drove to the Turnbull Canyon Road in North Whittier and parked his green two-door Mitsubishi Eclipse on the shoulder, Martinez said. Once parked, Meraz grabbed her hair and shoved her head out of the open passenger door, while Alea then pulled her out by her head as she stumbled. She was knocked to the ground and then simultaneously beaten and kicked by the three men. She then blacked out briefly after she was hit in the back of the head with a very hot, heavy object. Martinez said she began to come to when she heard Meraz say she's still alive, hit her again. So they hit her again, picked her up, and dragged her to the edge of the canyon where they threw her down, where she was witnessed getting back up to her knees. So one of the assailants then climbed down to where she was, grabbed her by the back of her hair, and slashed her throat, going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, at least four times. So apparently trying to saw off her fucking head. The men later returned to stab Martinez again and pushed her down another ledge before leaving. Battered and bleeding, she fled to a nearby home where a resident dialed 911. She fucking lived, boys.
Oh.
This woman almost got her head sawed off.
How?
Which was either with the most blunt knife on the history of the fucking planet. Butter knife. Seriously. Well, even the butter knife, though, serrated. Like, you're getting... Oh, man. Like...
I mean, she lived. I mean, she's not going to be singing in the choir anytime soon, but I'm sure she lived. But,
oh, dude.
She was protected by the...
She broke the curse.
She was protected by the electrical energies.
She was surrounded by a lightning dome. That's the only thing that makes sense here.
Kept her alive.
Boys, how did this woman survive this? That's insane.
How did you tell us? How did she survive?
I'll tell you why. This place is so fucking haunted that not even Death himself will go there to collect a soul.
Oh. Well, but so many, but what about all the other people that died?
Well,
anymore.
I've been trying to look into this whole time, and because I can't figure out what was in those needles, and it sounds like they were injecting her with fucking insulin, which is fucking crazy. But I don't understand.
That's really expensive.
Well, not only that, it's crazy expensive in the States, and it's like, okay, like it's kind of a fucking interesting way to kill somebody, put them into hypoglycemic shock, whatever, let them drift off into sleep and die. But so if you're going to fucking inject them with insulin, that should be it. Why are you going to go ahead and bash them with rocks and stab them and saw off their head? It's like, Jesus.
They really went for it and it didn't work somehow.
What's that guy's name in fucking Austin Powers? Mustafa or whatever? Will Ferrell plays him?
Yeah.
You know where he's supposed to, I'm not dead yet.
I've broken both my legs.
Very badly.
And I'm severely burnt.
Yeah. This chick didn't want to die, though. Props to Cristina Martinez. No, she's a badass.
Maybe she broke the curse.
Or maybe she's a fucking zombie coming back for revenge.
Well, you know what it is though? Like maybe she was helped by like vengeful spirits who had been murdered in that on those grounds and stuff. Who were protectors, like protectors of people victimized in that area. Rob, the innocent. Yeah, like maybe it's something like that. Like because it seems wild.
So what you're saying is it's like a bunch of fucking like Patrick Swayze ghosts and like Casper and stuff that are like, we're gonna protect this fucking canyon. We're sick of this shit.
Yeah, like you. No. We're not gonna have evil men come and do evil things here anymore. This is a nice place.
We're gonna make pottery here.
We're gonna do good things. Yeah, erotic pottery.
Yeah, like we're not down for this kind of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the that's probably the most recent thing of the creepy twists and turns of Turnbull Canyon.
How did she live? Yes,
I know. How we can get into final thoughts on the creepy look. The as Braden said, the most haunted place
one
in
of
the world.
The most haunted
one
canyon.
Of the most haunted places on Earth.
Well, listen, this is also this is part of my final thoughts here. This is one of the most popular places for amateur ghost hunters who are trying to kick off their YouTube channel to go to. Because my God, you can lost on hours and hours and hours of people visiting the gates of hell.
Hell.
Some find more stuff than others. Most don't find anything. But I, as for like this area and the like, for me, it has all the recipe of like what you need for a spooky area. But like, I'm a firm believer that once, like, you get these stories and you start getting these urban myths, and they start bleeding to everyone, and everyone starts to know, and everyone starts to think that, like, hey, this place is a scary place. This place is haunted. Bad things happen. You almost, as a population, will that place to do these things. Like, you are giving this place that energy to do that. Where, you know, I go back to, like, I believe our conscious thought has more power than we believe. And when you have masses of people thinking that this is a bad place and an evil place, you give rise to those kind of energies that feed on that. And I believe that wholeheartedly. So I think that mixed with the, you know, the Spanish absolutely murdering Native Americans there back in the past, and like that, and the Native Americans already said that this was a dark place and the Spanish forced them there and then murdered them in masses in this place that they already thought there was something wrong with, right? So I do believe that this place holds some sort of negative energy. I think it's older than human history though. Like, I don't think that whatever's there and is, you know, affecting the land, I think it's older than time itself, because we have these stories right from the Native Americans that this place, there's something wrong with it. So I think this is just one of those places on Earth that terrible things have always happened, and the energies there have just lingered and will linger and continue to linger long after we're gone.
Fucking lingerer.
Linger.
Lingerer.
Do you have to let it linger?
I'll agree with Braden. I mean, all the stories right from our, like, the history we have, dark place, the place of the devil, plane crashes, you know, people being murdered.
Murder.
People being almost murdered. And then
almost murder.
Somehow surviving.
Misfortune, right? Like.
Yeah, I mean.
Misfortune.
This is a.
Why? We should have said misfortune first. I mean, to say misfortune at the end of all that other stuff seems like it's a cop out, but say it again, misfortune, and then the plane crash and murder and everything else. Then
everything that's happened here and the stories and the legends that go along with it makes it just a creepy place to talk about. And it might be just like some places are, you know, just draw in that type of negative energy naturally. From whatever reason, like we talk about ley lines and stuff before. Maybe there's, you know, those are places of power and spirituality, but maybe there's negative, you know, like a negative ley line place. And, you know, a canyon like this, Pavegali Island, other places we talk about, Bad shit happens here, man. But having said that, if you're in the area, go during the day.
Let us know.
There's some really nice bike trails through this canyon.
Some hiking.
Really nice, actually. If you, it looks like a beautiful canyon. Just don't go at night. That's when the bad shit happens.
Well, or if you're in the area and you're driving through at night, let us know. Like, do you get a spooky feeling? Like, sometimes you just go to these areas and you know, like, and I'm curious. Like, I would love to go to it one day and, you know, next time we're in California, maybe we will.
When was the last person murdered? Not that long ago.
2002? Or no, she was almost murdered.
Almost murdered in 2009.
Oh, 2009.
See, I don't want to get almost paranormally activated in 2022 or something like that.
You want to get fully paranormally activated?
No, not any of it.
Full.
None of it.
100%.
None. No. Nope. You don't either. Don't pretend like you do.
I got a Ouija board inside. I actually have two, and I'm thinking about stacking them up this Halloween. Playing two at once with two planchettes.
Shit.
See what happens.
It's terrifying. Look like a DJ playing both boards at the same time. Ouija, Ouija, Ouija.
Zo, 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 zo. Confuse them. You get two talking through you to each other. It's like when you dial, I've seen those videos of you dial two Chinese restaurants and get them talking to each other. Same thing.
That's pretty hilarious.
It's Spooktober, so it's haunted.
It's haunted all times of the year. It's even more haunted now.
Just go back, boys, go back to the Pert Plus paradox. There's got to be a shit ton of Pert Plus running underneath that canyon. Tons of terrible stuff's happened. Bad juju all over that place.
Yeah.
Right? Come on. It's as paranormally activated as it gets.
And I think as more stuff, I honestly think that these places get negative energies, and as more stuff happens, it just builds and builds and builds and builds. Like, I think it's...
Are we getting honestly here? Are we actually getting honestly, or are we keeping it in Spooktober?
It's Spooktober.
Spooky as hell.
Okay.
Honestly.
Well, those are two different things for me. If we're getting honest, then I got to fucking shoot holes all over through this fucking place, but we're keeping it Spooktober.
There's no Spanish already did that, man.
Dude, there's no holes to chew. There's no holes to chew.
We have people in the comments of the live stream saying that they drive through there at night with friends and the feeling
they live to tell the tale
is eerie.
It's eerie. How could it not be? If you know the legend and you're there.
Don't stop to take a pee and just keep going.
No matter what you believe.
According to Braden's logic, anything that you, if you think about that it is haunted, then it becomes haunted. So
No.
Yes, you said.
It's exactly what you said.
I agree. Okay, I will agree with you. But the difference is this. The difference is like you as a single person being like, this is haunted, doesn't have as much power as like a community of tons of people consciously thinking this is a haunted place together. That's what gives the power. Like you going... Dan and being like, well, my fucking kettle is haunted. Guess what? Your kettle's not haunted, motherfucker. You get a couple hundred thousand people going like, Dan's kettle's haunted.
Might be haunted.
You know what? Maybe
well, how
you start
do you know that their consciousness is more powerful than my singular consciousness?
This is true.
I know. I've had a conversation with you outside this podcast.
Ooh. I can't take this Braden ghost anymore.
No, he looks like the spooky chicken nugget.
What? Hold on. There, Andrew. Fine.
The ghost of the chicken nugget I ate yesterday.
Don't you remember the little chicken nugget you get when you're Happy Meal? It was a little ghost that was shaped like a little. It looks exactly the same. I'll find it for you. It's hilarious. No.
a nugget ghost. Oh, what? Oh, now he's just gone. Just disappeared.
He's ghosted.
Anyways, creepy place. If you're in the area, let us know. Let us know what you think. Send us a message. If you got a creepy story about it, call into Cosmic Channels and tell us.
Yeah. And before we get into Theoretic of the Week or anything, if you're not on our Patreon already, you're not supporting your boys and you want to know a way to easily help us out, go to our YouTube channel. Give us a like and subscribe. Let all of our videos just play through the evening. Just let them play.
Let them build up that algorithm around you.
Woo!
Love it.
Put it in the group. Looks exactly the same. All he's missing is a little blue hat.
A little blue hat?
Yeah, it's him.
Mm. Yeah, I'll give that to you. I like that. Now, this current one, you just have a chicken nugget, but half your body is also showing.
Yeah, it's not working.
There's
well.
McDonald's in the background.
Not ideal.
It's bizarre.
All right, theorite of the week.
Ooh, I'm going to butcher this one, boys. Braden's going to explain why this fine gentleman is the theorite of the week, but I'm going to butcher this name.
We all do.
Ryan Eckenrot.
Well,
does that sound right?
Yeah, that sounds pretty close. Well, one, he's the theorite of the week because he is one of our new top tier supporters on Patreon. Thank you for that. And if you've been on our Facebook group, facebook.com/group/alientheorists theorizing, you may have noticed that Ryan has been trying to post a couple UFO videos for the past week. He would post it and he would have some sort of settings on private or whatnot. And then he would resubmit the post and it would still be on private. Then he would submit it again and it was still on private. But through his sheer perseverance,
determination,
finally,
grit,
determination, heart, grit.
A man of sheer will.
Yeah, he willed it to be, and it did. After countless attempts, he finally, even after I was commenting, making fun of him, I was accepting the posts, knowing that they weren't working. I said, hey, try again. And he finally got it. And because we had some fun with him as we were waiting for that video to pop up, Ryan, you are the theorite of the week.
Of the week.
Thanks for that.
Thanks for supporting the show. All right, it's that time again. If you're not supporting the show and you want to help out your favorite podcast, help out your boys, head over to Patreon, find the link in the podcast description. I think we got well over 200 hours now of bonus content. So.
Oh, yeah, we're getting close to 250 for sure.
Getting up there. More stuff.
250.
Bonus episode every week. You guys want to help me with some names on here?
Yep. I see my list.
All right. Start off with Jorge Figueroa. Carly.
Figueroa.
Carly. Joan Antoni Rodriguez. Christopher Powell. Anthony Perch. Cy Keenan and Carol Bradley goes up a tier.
Then we got Willie Nori, Raymond Moontoast, That Mac, Jonathan Chandler. Oh, and then Theorite of the Week, Ryan Eckenrod.
$50 supporter, baby.
Woo! Fucking hats off to you, buddy. And then this guy. Who comments on every single one of my fantasy football posts. Zell is by far the best one.
Damn right.
It is football, goddammit. It's American football. Thank you for donating.
Then we got Roberto Garza. James Garvey. Jacob Ludwig. Soapsheet. Kyle Garrity. And Coleman Stewart. And as we say at the end of these things, keep those eyes on the skies.
See you in after hours.